I'm George Case, author of Led Zeppelin FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the Greatest Hard Rock Band of All Time, and you're listening to Ramble On Radio.
I couldn't really go away and play with anybody else, because if I wanted to play, who else would I need for a drummer but Bonzo, you know? And the same with Jimmy and Jonesy. I don't think it wouldn't be right.
Bonzo was one of Robert's best friends from a very early age, so Robert was almost mortally wounded. He was wounded forever after. It took a big toll on Robert. And I think it took a big toll on the other two as well.
Hello and, well, Merry Christmas. It's Brian Gardner, and you're listening to Ramble On Radio, Episode 9. Today we are doing the last edition for 2011, as my scheduled recording next day is Christmas Day, and I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. I should point out today, normally I do this late at night, no family about, that sort of thing, and today I'm in the middle of the afternoon. This could get interrupted, it could get loud behind me. You just don't know what's going to happen. I should make sure everything's turned on, right? And I'm also using a different setup this time. I'm not using the snowball microphone, which sits on the desk and picks up every squeak of my chair and every time I shuffle the papers. I'm using a headphone set, and I have no idea how it's going to work, and I've kind of already been touching it and fooling with it. So we'll see how this works, as I'm kind of been borrowing all this equipment anyway. I'm looking to buy something, and I don't know what, so this is an experiment, and we'll see. Going back to the Christmas Day thing, I did give some thought to squeezing episode 10 somewhere between Christmas and New Year's, but, you know, you can't predict the schedule that week. So I'm just not going to bother. I'm just going to take a hiatus, take a little break. And it'll be about January 7th will be the next episode. So, you know, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And I will see you then. All right. Well, bye. No. Okay. So a lot happened this week. Historically, especially if you're a Led Zeppelin fan. The band officially split December 4th, 1980. And you heard some kind of clips from about that at the intro. As well, I didn't realize this. On December 10th, this, which is yesterday, I'm on this is December 11th. Yesterday, on December the 10th, two interesting things happened. Of course, we know about the 4 years ago, on December 10th, 2007, the boys reformed for what turned out to be a one-off and a last hurrah. There was, of course, we all expected more to come, and it never came. And I'll not get into that. It's just that that's the fact. That's what happened. And that's... So it was the last show, and I was there myself. It's actually the reason I'm doing all this is that show, because I started the blog around the time. See, now I just adjusted that, and I think my volume went way up. I started the blog right around that time, mostly because I know my family was sick to death of me talking about Led Zeppelin. So that's... that's why I'm even here now. There's almost no way, without that show, without me getting tickets to that show, that I would be doing this podcast right now. There's just no reasonable line of progression there that I see that puts me here. So if nothing else happened, nothing else came of it, this came of it. And if you enjoy this, and that's when you enjoy Ramble On Radio, the blog, then that's the one good thing that came, well, other than a great show came of it. Also, I didn't realize this. It was either 97 or 98 in on December 10th. Page and Plant played their last show together. So the same day, their last show together, and then their next show together, which was their last show together, if you follow all that progression. So about 10 years apart, they did two shows in that on that date, and they were both last shows, as it turns out. Otherwise, it was a funny 2 weeks in the world of Led Zeppelin. Last time I suggested maybe December would be a quiet month. Who knows how much news we would have. The very next day, a Jimmy Page story dropped. And there's been lots of news. All of it Jimmy Page. A little bit of John Paul Jones. Well, if you follow Jason Bonham's Twitter. But there's a story there I'm not touching with a 10-foot pole. But, yeah, so mostly Jimmy Page. Or there's a general heading news. Led Zeppelin songs appearing in movies, a Yardbirds box set, a Jackie DeShannon album, that sort of thing. All which we're going to get to. But no Robert Plant. None whatsoever for the first time since I've been doing this. We suppose he's enjoying marital bliss. It's funny, isn't it? That story's died. Neither confirmed nor denied by himself or Patty Griffith. But there's no question they've been sporting wedding bands. I've seen pictures. They're out there. But it's possible they decided, you know, to wear bands as a public show of commitment without performing a ceremony. I don't know about you. Plant doesn't strike me as a great, wedding ceremony kind of guy anyway. This doesn't strike me as the kind of guy to have, you know, the Reverend John Smith officiating over his vows of fidelity, honor, and chastity. Maybe like a Druidian goddess and an Elvis impersonator who would say things like, Robert, do you promise to always have Patty as your hunk of burning love? Don't be cruel. Give her cause to have a suspicious mind or always be her teddy bear. That sounds like something Robert might go for, throw on the wedding band and let's call it done. But so it's entirely possible they're kind of married in mind, but not in, you know, not with the appropriate notations from the appropriate justices of the peace and et cetera, et cetera. But it's a story that's died away, and Robert hasn't been up to much the last couple of weeks. And he's busy a couple of years, so hard to blame him for that, I suppose, right? And we're going to get to it right away. We have a good show for you. I have an interview with, and you heard the intro, George Case, author of Jimmy Page biography, Magus, Musician, and Man. It was an unauthorized biography. He used exclusively third-person sources and came up with a really good book. It was about 5 years ago. And he's also got a brand new book out called The Led Zeppelin FAQ, History of the World's Greatest Band or something like that. I don't have the subtitle on the top of my head. But it's I've seen it. I don't have it. I can't kind of review it for you at this stage, but what I've seen, I like, and it's a good interview. So I got an interview with George Case coming later. But let's get right to the news. John Paul Jones played a show with a guy called Minibus Pimps. The Minibus Pimps, also known as Need Another Hit of Acid. And there's some clips on YouTube, and it's oddball, kind of eccentric jazz. I don't even know how to describe it. It's not to my taste, I'll tell you that. It's probably not to most people's tastes, although they're obviously fans. And there's one in the video, he looks like he's playing a theremin app on an iPad. He's got it kind of posted on a stand. It's some sort of electronic pad anyway, and it sounds almost a theremin-y thing. I'll post, if you go to rambleonradio.com, after you're listening to this, I will post the videos or links to the videos at the very least. And you can have a listen, you can check it out. But you know, if you're looking for something that rocks or something with melody, that sort of thing, it's really free form jazz. But it's worthless. It's not horribly offensive either, you know, so you can put it on for 3 minutes and not, okay, well, whatever. He also received a fellowship during a ceremony this week at Trinity Laban Conservatory of Music and Dance in Deptford, which is pretty much Greenwich. And Jones was a schoolboy at Blackheath now. 4 years ago now, when I was in London for the show, we actually stayed in Blackheath. I had no idea he was played in the choir at the church there. We stayed right across the road from a big church in Blackheath. No idea if it's his. Blackheath's not that big, so it could have been, and there's a school there. I would love to have gone and got a picture of the school, picture of the church. If I'd have known that, I didn't realize that. But he's from Blackheath, which is, it's all kind of part of Greenwich. It was about a 10-minute walk to the Greenwich Conservatory. And Deptford is also part of that. So the Trinity Laban Conservatory of Music offered this fellowship to John Paul Jones. Previous recipients have been Ravi Shankar, the sitar player, and a composer, John Powell, who was nominated for an Oscar for the score for How to Train Your Dragon. So a nice little honor, not an Oscar, but it's a nice little honor for John Paul Jones. And here's a question. What's up with them crooked vultures? Just yesterday, very suddenly, their Facebook page started. They posted some videos, little chat. It's been 6-8 months since any action on that page. All of a sudden, there's 3 or 4 postings. And if you go through, if you go to the Foo's website, for instance, they have about 10 dates listed between now and April. In other words, they're not very busy. Queens of the Stone Age have a list, and I quote, no upcoming dates. There's nothing going on. Queens of the Stone Age, virtually nothing going on with Foo Fighters. John Paul Jones, as we know, continues to write his opera, but not much else. Plays with, you know, Mimbus Pimps, Minibus Pimps, plays with C6 Steve once in a while. And we call it done. So I just wondered when I saw that, when I checked out what was going on around it, if maybe them Crooked Vultures are ramping up, maybe a second album's coming, that sort of thing. But who knows? I mean, I don't have any inside information. I don't know. Anybody's got John Paul Jones' email address and want to send it to me, I'll be happy to check it out, email him and ask him. But it piqued my radar, and it's something I'll keep an eye on. And if 4 months from now you hear a new album, remember where you heard it first. You heard it here first. Tell everybody you know you heard it here first. But we'll see. We'll see. And if nothing happens, then don't mention it to anybody. Mr. Jimmy Page has had a busy couple of weeks. I have a number of things for Jimmy Page, actually. A drum skin signed by Jimmy Page will be auctioned for charity in memory of his old drummer Michael Lee. Michael Lee was, of course, the Page and Plant drummer. So on the 3rd anniversary of his death, this drum skin is going to be auctioned off. I'll put the link up to where you can auction it, or at least for the story, and it should be it should provide a link to where you can go to auction to bid on it if you're interested. And if somebody listening to this decides to go and bid on it, I'd love to see a picture. I'd love to hear about it. Speaking of pictures, this is an aside. Last week I had Ralph Hewlett on, or last time I had Ralph Hewlett on. And Ralph sent me some thank you pictures, some personal pictures he took of the band in 77. And so I want to kind of publicly mention that and thank Ralph. They were great pictures, really, really nice pictures. And it's nice to have. It was a nice little thing to receive in the mail. It was about 6 or 7 pictures, some in black and white, some in color, and they're sort of thing you will not see anywhere else. So it was nice. It was a nice treat, and I want to thank Ralph. So, but yeah, the I said drum skin auctioned off. I'll post a link to that. Death Wish 2 was released this week, re-released. 1,000 copies were released for £30 each. Last time I checked, they still had some copies. And the first 30 editions were supposed to be signed for £195. You could buy one of the signed copies. They ended up selling, quite accidentally, 120, I believe it is, 119 signed copies. And due to some problem with the website and all this here in the colonies, yeah, you know, tack on £15. So for an unsigned, it's about $60. For a signed, it's closer to $300, I guess. And so the Death Wish 2, and there were, last time I checked, some copies of the unsigned. They oversold the signed copies, and they ended up offering people their money back on that. Whether anybody took them up on it, I don't know. But just another kind of foobar, really, that was with that Jimmy Page website. And there's been no shortage of those, have there? There's a car for sale this week. Apologies. Somebody's banging around. I'm kind of half listening to what's going on around me, and there's somebody banging around upstairs. And that's the reason I do this at night when it's quiet. No distractions. A car once owned by Jimmy Page, 1936 Cord 810 Phaeton, I guess, Phaeton, Photon Phaeton, was purchased by anonymous buyer at Corey's auction for £125,000. Page seems to have bought it on tour in around 70-71 and completely rebuilt the thing. Owned it for 20 years. And there are pictures of that online. Coys.co.uk have pictures of it. Coys auction site. And we'll, again, I'll link to that. RambleOnRadio.com. That'll all get linked to. And I'm back. I've actually been away. It's later. I've dealt with the Noisy Family matter, and don't mean I killed them all off. So if you hear of a mass murder by a podcaster in Ontario, don't worry, this one's coming next week. It's not me, not me, some other crazy podcaster. So in the general news, in 2002, on their album called Shine, an all-girl orchestral quartet called Bond did a version of Kashmir. And it turned up in the last 2 weeks on a trailer for John Carter. John Carter is a series of books by Edgar Rice Burroughs, who I believe did Tarzan. I think that's the name, you know, I know the name. I'm almost positive it's Tarzan was where Edgar Rice Burroughs come from. It's 11 volume series called John Carter, and it's kind of a Civil War veteran is relocated to Mars and has various adventures, as you can imagine. And so during the trailer, the Kashmir, the Bond version. You've never heard Bond. If you're into classical, you've heard of Bond. They're quite popular, and they're quite good. They have the advantage of the pretty ladies, so they got the selling point. But kind of unlike some of the pop pretty ladies, they have the talent, they have the skill. You don't become any kind of classical musician, you know, if you can't play your instrument. It's just not. And it's you know, much like it goes on in pop, it goes on in classical and jazz. You know, if you're a Diana Krall fan, you know, in jazz, that kind of look has an advantage for you. And they're good, and Kashmir is a good, it's a good version of Kashmir. And it sounds like on the trailer they added an orchestra over a choir over top. So it's different, and we'll definitely get the trailer on the webpage. In other movie news, if you're a movie fan, it was a good week. Trent Reznor's full version of Immigrant Song was released this week. There's a YouTube video of it, and there's also it was available for download through iTunes. So, and it's got Karen O, I believe is the name of the singer, doing the vocals, and Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails. And it is what it is. Not my thing. I'd rather the Bond version of Kashmir personally, but a fair number of Zeppelin fans were fond of it. We're saying good things about it this week. If you're a Nine Inch Nails fan, if you're that kind of industrial type of music, then you're probably... See, I told them I was going to be down here, and I thought they were going to be quiet for 20 minutes so I could finish. You hear the friggin' dog going crazy, and oh, it's hard to do this. This is why I do it in the middle of the night, usually. It's just, you know, houses are crazy places, right? So the Trent Reznor and Trent Reznor also made available, it's from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the movie. And I'm not a Daniel Craig fan. I think he's ruined the Bond franchise. I can imagine he's going to ruin the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo franchise as well. I am a fan of the series. I'm a fan of the original movies in Swedish, and they're quite good. Is it Sweden? Stockholm. Yeah, I think it's Sweden. But anyway, it's one of those countries it comes from, and they're quite good movies. Really edgy, really dark and edgy. And I can't imagine Hollywood sticks with that kind of dark edgy. And I can't imagine pouty Mr. Bond, Daniel Craig, being anywhere near credible. But there you go. Anyway, so it's from that movie, the Immigrant Song by Trent Reznor, and he did the whole soundtrack, and the soundtrack will be released December 27th or 8th, I believe it is, but he made available 6 songs from the soundtrack as a free download last weekend, and I imagine you can still get that. Just Google around for it. I don't have the link for it anymore. I did download it, and not to my taste. It was all I will say. That's all I can credibly say. I can't say it's crap. I don't know. I don't know what's good and bad in this kind of music. I can't say it's great because I don't know what's good and bad. And it's a style of music that I don't comprehend very well. And so I'm not about to try and review it. It's just not to my taste is all I will say. All right. We talked, I think, the very first episode of this podcast about a Yardbirds box set coming. It's called Glimpses, and it was finally released. It's available now. It is 30-some-odd pounds. I'm actually going to look it up here for you. But it's around $60, I think, is what it comes to. I can't look it up for you. My internet's down. That's right. We've been fighting with my internet for the last hour. I don't know what the hell's going on. Other than the fact I'm Canadian, and you either have Bell or Rogers, and both of them are awful. That's what's really going on here. And good news for us Leaf fans, both of them joined together to buy the Maple Leafs. So, you know, if you thought the Leafs were crap earlier, holy cow. But anyway, Glimpses is the name of the box set. It was 4 or 5 discs. It had behind-the-scenes cuts. It had interviews. It had... and it had regular tracks. It had some live stuff. It had from all eras of their career, right from about 63 through to 69. If you're a big Yardbirds fan, it's probably a great box set to get. Another name from the 60s pops up this week. And there's a new Jackie DeShannon album. If you know who Jackie DeShannon is, or if you don't, how about this? She was Jimmy Page's girlfriend in the mid-60s. And... she wrote a number of songs that you would know. She is, it's called When You Walk in the Room. And she's a pretty girl, still pretty, you know, 60s, got to be in her 60s now. And she's still a pretty girl. And she's one of the songs she co-wrote actually was, the Juice Newton song. I want to say Angel in the Morning, but I know that's not it. Let me see what's going on here. I'm all out of sorts because of my my break. Everything I had up is down, so bear with me a second here. Okay, so here's the Jackie DeShannon. Jackie, I say she's a songwriter, and you'll know some of the songs. Now, this is her old songs, the one she... that you would know or you might know, that hits by a lot of other people in a lot of cases, that she's redone as acoustic songs. And here's it's 11 songs. When You Walk Into the Room, Put a Little Love in Your Heart, you probably know that one. Betty Davis Eyes was the one I was thinking of, not Angel in the Morning. Betty Davis Eyes, Heart in Hand, Come and Stay with Me, Don't Doubt Yourself, Babe, Needles and Pins, That's another, I think Joan Jett covered that, and Breakaway, What the Worlds Need Now is Love, which I always thought was a Burt Bacharach song. I wonder if she co-wrote that one with him. Bad Water and Will You Stay in My Life. All Jackie DeShannon songs. And listening to the samples on Amazon, it sounds pretty good. Sounds all right. If I bought CDs, I might search that one, but I don't buy CDs anymore. I don't think I know too many people who do. Holy God, are they dead. And you know what? I'm waiting patiently for the Yardbirds one. My internet connection is up. Theirs is suddenly down somehow. So I'm not going to be able to get you much more information on the Yardbirds, except to say it's called Glimpses. It's from Easy Action, easyaction.co.uk. I'll put a link on the website. And if you're interested, let them know. Let them know you heard about it from me. Kind of drop them a line and say, hey, because I complained before. They wouldn't send me, well, I'm not complaining. They would not send me a review copy. No, sorry, we don't do review copies. It's a limited edition sort of thing. Oh, well, okay. And, you know, so I won't be reviewing it probably. Certainly not dropping 60 pounds on something just so I can review it here. I don't make any money doing this, so I'm not about to spend a fortune for the privilege of doing it, you know? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So, if you do, let them know where you heard about it. Let them know that there's some advantage in working with the bloggers and the podcasters out there for them. That's it. Okay, so George Case, I mentioned earlier, wrote Majest Man Musician, which I think is a great Jimmy Page biography for what it is, and he never talked to Jimmy Page, he never worked with Jimmy Page, he never did any first source interviews. What he did was he picked through third source interviews. He picked through all the interviews and all the stories by so many people. And he got a really comprehensive story on the book. It's really quite good. And if you look if you look at the back at the bibliography on this book, it is pages and pages and pages. What am I at here? In small type too. I can barely read it. But the bibliography starts at page 270, so 8-page bibliography. Books, magazines, websites, you name it. He's scoured it, he's read it, he's reviewed it. Interview with Eddie Van Halen, Page Against the Machine, Guitar World, April 1998. You know, he's read everything. He's gone to as many newspaper articles, videos, DVDs. He's listened to music, including Page's early session work. Including, one wonders if there's a Jackie DeShannon listening they mention in there, just out of curiosity. And I'm not seeing it. That's the one thing he didn't actually seem to do, was listening to Jackie DeShannon records. Anyway, and so he puts together a really comprehensive story pulled out of all these sources. And one of the things I really like, when the story's not clear, when there's, you know, there's two or three different accounts of a story, he'll mention it. He'll say that. He'll say, however, Jeff Beck says it happened X, Y, Z. You know, Jeff Beck says that, you know, I don't know. I forget where I read that, but there was a Jeff Beck says one thing. I think it was the Jeff Beck leaving the Yardbirds. Page has said one thing through the years. Beck has said another thing through the years. So he seems to, he rolls the story out the way he seems to think it probably works. And then says, but here's some alternatives. So it really is comprehensive, which is hard to do when you're not digging through, you know, firsthand resources and whatnot yourself. So it's a good, very good book. And so I'm looking forward to getting my hands on Led Zeppelin FAQ. And I know it's available on Amazon. It's available on Amazon. It's available, I don't think it's available on Kobo yet. I think I checked that and it wasn't available. Led Zeppelin FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the Greatest Hard Rock Band of All Time. That's a mouthful. It's a paperback. It's what they call a trade paperback, which is size of a hardcover, but paperback. It's actually, you can get it for, you know, $14.85 on Amazon.com. List price at $20. It doesn't say. I'm almost positive they have an electronic version of it too, but I'm not seeing it. Anyway, George Case, and I talked to George late last week, actually last Friday. Another quality interview. You throw a question out there, and he's loaded up with information, so he just went with it. And here he is. Here's George Case, author of Led Zeppelin FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the Greatest Hard Rock Band of All Time. I'm with George Case, author of Jimmy Page, Magus, Musician, and Man, Out of Our Heads, Rock and Roll Before Drugs Wore Off, and his newest book, Led Zeppelin FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the Greatest Hard Rock Band of All Time. George, I haven't read the new book yet, but I was nosing through it in the store last week, and in about 2 minutes, I learned something I never knew. Mick Bonham did the whistle on Fool in the Rain. I never heard that. Where did you get that?
I got that from another Zeppelin buff online. There's quite a community of Zeppelin fans out there who are sort of digging up information themselves, and I acknowledge this guy in the book. There's a lot of stuff that's going around back and forth, so not all of it has been published in books, but the diehard fans are still coming up with this stuff, and I've sort of drawn on some of their expertise in the book. But yeah, that's something I hadn't heard beforehand either, but this guy, Steve Jones, had heard about it. I think he talked to John Bonham's mom at a Zeppelin convention in England or something, and he heard this. So all this information has been floating around, and I tried to compile some of the most obscure stuff.
Yeah, I know who Steve Jones is, and so now I wanted to talk a bit about the symbols.
Oh yeah.
My niece has a Celtic tattoo that's essentially John Paul Jones symbol.
Right.
And I was in an antique store a couple of weeks ago and ran across a Ballantine beer tray.
Oh yeah, the three circles.
Yeah. So I mean, John Bonham's and John Paul Jones, fairly standard bits of symbology.
Right.
But Robert Plant's is a little different. Where did that come from?
Well, apparently that came from someone named Robert Churchward, who was an English writer of the early 20th century. And he had come up with a whole history of this lost civilization called Mu, M-U, right down including their flag, their symbols, their coats of arms and everything. Now, this is a civilization that never existed. He thought it did. It was supposedly somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. It's basically like an Atlantis legend. It's a myth. It's speculation. There was never anything to it. But the details that this guy came up with was pretty in-depth, and I guess Robert Plant read it about this time when people were into that sort of thing, lost civilizations, Atlantis, crystals, and all that stuff, and he liked the feather and the symbol, or the feather and the circle symbol, so he took it from there, and according to him, it was like, it was also adapted from Native American tribes, the feather, so, right. But it was something that existed before Robert Plant came up with it. He just took it from this very, very distant, very obscure writing. And as I say in the book, there is no lost civilization that moved, but the symbol of it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and but the real mystery all these years was the Jimmy Page symbol.
Yeah, and the Zozo.
Yeah, and it's only recently people have kind of sorted out what it is.
Right, they did come across it from, it's basically an astrological symbol from, I think, the 16th century, like 1557.
Yeah.
In those days, when people were coming, astrology was a real science before it is now, and people really thought that it was this was serious, almost mathematical stuff. So when they came up with symbols for the different stars and planets, they were quite a lot more ornate than what we see today with Pisces, the fish, or Libra, the scales. So Zoso was a representation of Capricorn, which is Jimmy Page's astrological symbol, and he dug it up somewhere. He came across it because he knew a lot. He read a lot of these obscure occult books, and he adapted it into his symbol. And what I say is in Zeppelin FAQ is they all came up with these pretty quickly, but he came up with one that was pretty obscure that most people wouldn't have seen right away, and it did have some mystery to it. It's almost like some magical incantation that only one person ever knows the real meaning of it, and I think that was the appeal of it for him, that it wasn't something you could guess right away, and it seemed to hold a lot of mystery, even though when you look into it, it was just basically a representation for Capricorn.
Yeah, which, you know, when you find that out after all these years, it kind of just, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, people were reading all kinds of stuff into it, like stuff from Aleister Crowley and various satanic stuff. But no, it was, when you go back far enough, it is just connected with astrology, and it's just a lot more elaborate than what we usually see of an astrological symbol. But, I mean, of course, it does look cool. It looks mysterious, and there is something really, even now that we know the meanings of it or where the symbols came from, but they're still really effective on that album, and they make a great sort of stand-in logo for Led Zeppelin. Yeah. Everyone sees them, and right away they see Led Zeppelin, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and actually Jimmy Page doesn't even need to use his own name anymore. He can just use the symbol and people know who it is.
Right. I mean, everyone knows that. Yeah. Whatever they, if they don't know exactly what it means, they know that it does mean Jimmy Page, Led Zeppelin. That's where it, that's how we associate it today. Yeah.
Now, when you were researching this book, did you, I guess that originally came up in a book called De Rerum Veritate. Did you manage to get a copy of that?
Which book?
The symbol itself, the first, the 1557.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I never got a copy of the original book, but I did find it. It's in a book that's still available, or you might find it in a library, a dictionary of occult symbols.
Okay.
And this is something that came up maybe 1980. Someone had put together a whole compilation of all these astrological and alchemical symbols from the medieval times and the Renaissance time. And I think someone just stumbled across it, like, because when you look through all the designs that people were using, right away the Zoso one stands out. It doesn't look exactly like it does on the Led Zeppelin 4 album, but it's the only one that looks like the Zoso. So that was dug up, I think, by someone who was not even interested in Led Zeppelin or rock music. He just found all these symbols from all these old manuscripts, and someone else flipping through it say, hey, there's Zoso, that's Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
And then he connected it to the astrologer.
Oh, okay. So what was the, why write this book? What was the impetus behind it?
Well, I written the Jimmy Page biography a few years ago. That came out in 2007, and that did pretty well. There's a lot of Zeppelin fans, obviously. Then I wrote for the same publisher, Out of Our Heads, on the whole classic rock period. And when they're putting together the FAQ line, which includes the Beatles and the Doors and the Beach Boys and all these people, they wanted to do Led Zeppelin, and I was the candidate because I'm already associated with that publisher. I've already done stuff for them, and they figured I was qualified to do it. So I think I got the contract to do it in 2009. It took me about a year and a half to write, another year or so to get formatted into a book, and it's just come out now in, at the beginning of November.
Excellent, excellent. And so what do you hope readers get out of it?
Well, I think there's a lot more here than they would normally find from the standard Zeppelin biography, because I've gone into some pretty serious details. There is a lot of information floating around out there on the Internet and elsewhere, but here I've really organized it quite well so that if you want to know about Led Zeppelin and the occult, there's a chapter on that. Led Zeppelin and groupies, there's a chapter on that. Led Zeppelin's musical instruments, there's a chapter on that, like right down to the serial numbers of the guitars and everything. So it's like a big reference text of Led Zeppelin, and I have dug up a few exclusives. Like, I spoke to the guy who painted the Swan Song logo, and I've got some other stuff in there too that just you wouldn't normally find. There's a lot of stuff most people generally know about Led Zeppelin, but there's a lot of stuff they don't know. And when I went into, for example, all the songs Page played on as a studio musician in the 60s, like, here it is all organized and laid out. So all the stuff that people have generally been talking about for years, I've kind of put it together in a really readable format, I think.
Yeah, nice. It's almost a dictionary-style format, isn't it?
What's that?
It's almost a dictionary-style format, really laid out.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't want to do it like a straight biography, and that's not what they're looking for. It's something that you can open up at any page and just flip through it and find a section on one particular aspect of the group, and there it is. You don't have to read it from beginning to end. You can open it up anywhere. I put a lot of effort into talking about the album covers and, of course, the symbols like we were talking about. So who did them and what all the imagery means, because a lot of those album covers you can look at for hours and get something out of. So I really wanted to go into how that was designed and how the music was made, like the nuts and bolts of what instruments they were using or how certain things were recorded. Again, this is stuff that people have been hearing about or speculating for years, but here's the hard facts about it. The road crew. Here's all the guys who are actually in the road crew. Swan Song Records. Here's all the people who actually worked for Swan Song Records. You know, I just get some hard facts, some solid data on all this stuff. The addresses, where they actually lived when they were doing Led Zeppelin, when they were members of the band. So I just got into a lot of confirmation of particular details that I don't think have been really laid out before.
You mentioned the Swan Song logo, the guy who drew that or painted that. That's originally a painting or off
yeah,
a painting.
Oh yeah, he adapted it from William Rimmer, who was an artist of the 19th century. And he came forward and he wanted to do an original, but the Zeppelin guys, according to him, they'd already picked that one and he just had to adapt it into an original painting. He did the lettering himself. That was all original. This is a guy named Joe Patagno, who, by coincidence, he's also the guy who does all the covers for Motorhead, that big Staggletooth face. That's the same guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's the connection between Zeppelin and Motorhead. But he lives in Denmark now, apparently, and I communicated with him by email, but he told me about meeting the band and coming up with the Swan Song logo. He did several versions of it, but that's the one they picked. And they said, you know, they wanted the one from this painting. He said the client is always right, so he just went ahead and did it. But yeah, he came up with a nice illustration.
Yeah, he did, actually. It's a really cool illustration.
Yeah.
So I want to go backwards a little bit to the Jimmy Page book, which might be my favorite Led Zeppelin / Jimmy Page biography.
Yeah, that's great.
I think you did a great job kind of sourcing together all sorts of material and making it into a nice, smooth story.
Good. That was the idea.
Yeah. What made you decide to write that book?
Well, that was another case where I was going around. I've been writing for a long time, and I was shopping around this manuscript on classic rock music and hadn't hadn't got published yet, but when I approached this one agent, he said, I don't know about this idea here, but he had just been, by coincidence, approached by Hal Leonard Books, the publisher, and they were looking for someone to write the Jimmy Page biography. So it's kind of like the idea was already ready to be published, but they just needed someone to actually do it, and that was me. So once they matched me up with the publisher, and I showed them some of my other credentials, and I told them that, yes, I play guitar, I know Led Zeppelin music, here's a sample of my writing, that's when I got the contract to do it. And then I spent a good year or so working on that one, and I did dig up a lot of stuff, all the material that was out there that, again, people had heard about but never actually confirmed. So I did try to lay it out in a real biographical format.
Yeah, there's a lot of source material going on in that book. It's
there is. I mean, I dug up all the biographies, all the magazine articles, videos, bootleg records, and it's scattered out in so many places. Here I've organized it in one place so you can get it as a real story.
Okay, that's all I got for you.
Okay, excellent.
So thanks very much.
Are you putting it on the podcast coming up?
Yeah, I'll be recording it next Friday.
Okay.
So it'll be next weekend it comes out. I'll send you a link to it.
Okay, thanks.
And that was George Case. As I said before, Led Zeppelin FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the Greatest Hard Rock Band of All Time from the FAQ series. It's a trade paperback. It's available on Amazon. Go to rambleonradio.com. And I'll have a link there within the next couple of days. I'll definitely have a sidebar link there, as well as a link on the page itself. All right. Now, I was at last Sunday. I was at a record show, being a music geek, being a record geek. I picked up a couple of interesting things, and I wanted to talk about them briefly. Let me put away George Case first. All right. So the first one is, and this is just exciting. Well, not exciting, but Led Zeppelin's BBC concert on LP. This is, the reason I love this. This is one of my favorite, and they did it on the BBC sessions. Of course, they released all this stuff, but this is the one that has What Is and What Should Never Be on it. Plus, Going to California, Stairway to Heaven. So it's the last one they did. And when we were kids, they used to play this on the radio. Kids, I mean teenagers. And a buddy of mine had a cassette of it that he had taped off the radio. We used to listen to it in the car all the time. Just loved this session. And it was really cool to pick up the record and have a good listen to it. And not the cleaned up version that they did in the BBC sessions, but the bootleg version right off the radio, the way it came. And it's a quality, because it was on the radio, it's a quality bootleg. But it's real pure, and I love the slide guitar solo in What Is and What Should Never Be on this song. It's in this version. It's just, I think listening to this on the radio is when I learned how great these guys could be live, because the song remains the same, is really kind of sterile, you know? And I like it. I like it a lot. There's some stuff in it I really, really like, but it's, you know, it was kind of another live album. Everybody had those at the time, but when you listen to the BBC sessions, man, he plays that solo from What Is and What Should Never Be spot on, or you know, that's how nice Going to California is, and it was yet another version of Stairway to Heaven. So that was a cool pickup. But the other one I picked up was Spirit. It's an album called Spirit. I think it's a reissue because it's got their first album and their second album, I believe, on it. And their first album had a song on it called Taurus, which... if you know the story, supposedly Jimmy Page heard this song, and he ripped off Stairway to Heaven from Taurus. And Randy California, the guitar player who did that song, kind of claims that's in fact true, that he should have sued at some point. But, you know, so I put it on, and I've heard the snippet. I've heard, that sounds like Stairway to Heaven. I've heard that a number of times. But putting it on and just listening to the record, you say... Hold on a minute. It's about 30 seconds of Taurus that sounds like Stairway to Heaven. And it's not the same. It's not the exact same chords. Just listening to it, you could say, hold on a minute, that's not exactly the same. And they certainly don't handle the chords the same. They certainly emphasize the minor aspect of the A minor in the first chord, for instance, in a way that Jimmy Page doesn't. So it's got a completely different feel to it than Stairway to Heaven really does. But beyond that, once he finishes that section, he goes off into other sections, which is bears no resemblance to Stairway to Heaven, bears a striking resemblance in the middle section to Blackbird. And by the way, this was released about 6 months before Blackbird. But nobody's ever accused Paul McCartney of ripping that off. But it's there. The connection is there. It sounds the same. And then it goes into one that sounds so much, unbelievably, like Alice Cooper's Stephen, which, of course, was maybe 7 years later, 8 years later. I was listening to it going, almost with my jaw dropped. That's a take. That somebody can make a real case, I think, on that song. But of course, it's not Stairway to Heaven, so who wants to do that? And I just thought, just listening to it, once I heard the snippet, and I thought, geez, there's a case to be made there. But when you hear the whole song, the case starts to disappear very fast. And even just listening with a jaundiced ear to that intro, which is supposedly, Page copped, you're talking about four chords. You're talking about not out four outrageously, they're four chords that kind of fall nicely together on the guitar anyway. And I just think the case is after listening to the whole song and listening to it carefully, I think the case is a lot less makeable than it was before when I just kind of casually listened to it. So that's worth, if you're interested in that sort of thing, dig up Taurus. I'm sure it's available on YouTube. And I may someday sit down and actually write a post on this subject. But I would have to listen to it a number of times. I'd have to really break it down a lot closer than I have. But it may be something worth doing at some point. That was just a thought. It was something that ran by me. And bringing it on home here, and my guitar's out of reach. I actually fell over a little while ago. So I can't do my little bring it on home, but my letter shows silly story to end the thing. Celebrity chef Alton Brown was on Jimmy Fallon this week, and he answered all his questions in haiku. Here's a few examples. On his favorite sandwich choice, smoky pastrami with Thousand Island dressing, Gruyere cheese, and kraut. Of his experiments at home, when I cook at home, I never don a lab coat, but things do explode. And, of course, asked about his choice of music whenever I bake, especially custard pie. I crank Led Zeppelin. And Alton Brown has, I believe on his show he's mentioned Led Zeppelin before. I think he's even mentioned that he saw Led Zeppelin at one point on his show. But, yes, he's a known fan, and there you go. Whenever I bake, especially custard pie, I crank Led Zeppelin. Good job, Alton Brown, on that. I got to find a clip of it. Maybe the next one up, maybe I'll use that as an intro clip. Maybe that's what I should have had here. But there you go. Later Schiller story to end. That's it. We got through it. Somehow managed to get through it with the dog only barking once and me being distracted only 150 times. Hope you enjoyed. Have a very, very Merry Christmas. Have a very Happy New Year. Everybody have a safe holidays. And I'm going to be back. It's around the 10th, I think around the 7th of January, I figured I'm back. Let me go way up to the top. Yeah, it'll be January 7th, probably, that I record the next one. So we'll get it out there around the 8th, 9th. We'll get right back on this session. The next one will be number 10. Number 10's a bit of a big deal, and I'm going to, I got a couple of ideas for ways to make it fun and interesting, but I don't know. I who knows what turns up between now and then. It's going to be 4 weeks. It could be so much news. I don't have time to get anybody on. But of course, over Christmas, it could be zero news. Who knows what's going to happen? So everybody have a good Christmas. Have a very Led Zeppelin Christmas. Hope you get your favorite Led Zeppelin stocking stuffer under the tree. And I will be seeing you in 2012. This is Brian Gardner with Ramble on Radio, episode number 9.
What is your favorite music to work to?
Whenever I bake, especially custard pie, I crank Led Zeppelin.